from the campus of the University of Pennsylvania Wharton School. This is Work and Life on Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School. Here is Professor Stu Friedman.
Hey, welcome everybody to Work and Life on SiriusXM's Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School. Yes, I'm your host, Stu Friedman. I'm an organizational psychologist here at the Wharton School. I'm director of the Wharton Work-Life Integration Project, which we founded back in 1991. So we're 25 years old, the Work-Life Integration Project. And if you want to find some really useful and interesting research, videos, how we teach content here at Wharton and around the world and with organizations and all kinds of companies, how to better integrate work and the rest of life and the work we do in the social policy arena, just Google Wharton Work Life and you can find out all about it. Coming up on today's show, I'm going to be joined by the great Sidney Finkelstein. He is the Stephen Roth Professor of Management at Dartmouth College and is the author of a fantastic new book that you're going to want to learn about and get for yourself and your boss. It's called Super Bosses: How Exceptional Leaders Master the Flow of Talent. What we do on this show is explore everything related to work and the rest of life, and that's your family, your community, your private self, your mind, body, and spirit. What we're trying to do is give you useful information that's going to help you to create a greater sense of harmony in your world among the different parts of your life. And we come to you live each Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern. So if you're listening live, it is 7 o'clock Eastern time. We also rebroadcast throughout the week and love to hear from you, our listeners. So you can write at Business Radio at SiriusXM.com. You can also follow on Twitter at Stu Friedman. That's StewFriedman. And our channel's handle is BizRadio111. That's B-I-Z Radio 111. Before I introduce our guest, let me just tell you that we're going to be talking about super bosses, but I saw The Boss in concert here in Philly on Friday night with my wife and two of my kids. And so I expect that we will be speaking with Sidney Finkelstein about the super boss, Bruce Springsteen, who whose performance was really quite remarkable. And his life and career is worthy of our attention as one who demonstrates the qualities of great leadership. And indeed, I have written about that in my book, Leading the Life You Want. There's a chapter in there about Bruce. So I'm hoping we'll talk with Professor Finkelstein about The Boss in particular, as well as all kinds of other super bosses. And we'll be picking that conversation up in the second part of our show. But right now, I am joined by Sidney Finkelstein. He is the Stephen Roth Professor of Management, and he's the director of the Center for Leadership at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth College. He's also the author of this wonderful new book called Super Bosses: How Exceptional Leaders Master the Flow of Talent. Professor Finkelstein has published several bestsellers, including the number one bestseller in the United States and Japan, Why Smart Executives Fail. It's a brilliant, brilliant book, research-based, highly accessible, and extremely relevant for business leaders, for investors, anyone interested in how to avoid failure as an executive. Professor Finkelstein, he is a recognized thought leader on leadership, on strategy, on corporate governance. He's listed in the world's top 25 leadership gurus, many other accolades that you can find out about him online. Right now, let's get talking with him. Sid, welcome to the show.
Hi, Stu. Great to talk to you.
Well, it's great to have you here, and thank you for joining us this evening. So let's get right into it. Super bosses. What separates good bosses from the best bosses, from the super bosses?
Well, you know, super bosses are people bosses that help other people accomplish more than they ever thought possible. And I don't know that there's a lot of people listening that will say, hey, I've got a boss like that, or I've had a boss like that. Some have, many haven't. Good bosses will do some of the same things as a super boss, but super bosses will do them more intensely. Take, for example, mentoring. Mentoring is a well-known idea. People talk about it all the time.
Sure.
And if you have a good boss, they'll kind of give you some advice and maybe give you kind of help you navigate the organizational system. But super bosses are kind of like super mentors. They're mentors on steroids. They are always engaged with you, always interacting with you. So they do more things. They do things in a more intense way. And then they also do some stuff that very, very few, even good bosses, do.
All right. So what is it that really separates what you refer to as the super bosses from the rest of the pack?
You know, there's a bunch of things, but just to name a couple that I think are really, really kind of cool. One is around an apprenticeship. You know, that's the way everyone pretty much learned their craft for centuries. And it's gone by the wayside over the last, certainly over the last 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And what super bosses have done, have resurrected the old apprenticeship model where you're kind of rolling up your sleeves and working with people on your team. You're engaged with them closely. You're not quite going as far as that micromanagement word, but you're also not afraid to get in the trenches with them. You're a teacher, you're a coach, and a lot of it's kind of like the master-apprentice type of relationship that we all know and is well known is been resurrected here in the management world, in the leadership world. And I think that's something that is still maybe not as common as maybe we'd like to see it, but super bosses certainly do certainly do that. And then I'll say one other thing that really is a big highlight, I think, of what they do that's different, and that is they are just big-time innovators. They innovate in their business work, you know, whether it's George Lucas and with technology and digital technology for film, whether it's a Ralph Lauren and fashion and his innovations kind of redefining what the lifestyle of fashion could be, or Julian Robertson and hedge funds. They are big-time innovators in their business, and they're also innovators in how they think about people. And I think that's a combination that's pretty impressive and one we could learn from.
So when you say innovators in terms of how they deal with people, lead them, cultivate them, what do you, could you just explore that a little further?
Yeah.
In what ways are they innovative?
So give you a couple of examples. So one is how they find talent, how they think about hiring talent.
Mm-hmm.
Most companies and most of the world of HR there's a model in place, and the model is let's identify what we need, come up with a job description, and then go through lots of resumes and interviewing and pick the person that checks the most boxes and is the most impressive in that process. And it's not that super bosses will never do that. In a large company, when you're hiring a lot of people, you have to follow some of these norms. But super bosses do something different, which is they're willing to create a job for someone that they think is the right person. And I know the shutters going up in the HR community hearing that, but that's what they do. They are willing to create the job. I mean, there's lots of good stories from, you know, Ralph Lauren and finding a woman at a restaurant when he was out with his family, getting excited about, you know, look how she was dressed and how she put herself together,
mm-hmm.
and how she thought about clothes, and the way you start having a chat with people occasionally when you're out at dinner, and next thing you know, he's offering her a job to Bill Walsh, the famous San Francisco 49er head coach, that really gave birth to so many of the great head coaches in the National Football League,
mm-hmm.
and how he thought about and the types of people that he would end up drafting. He'd create opportunities for people that wouldn't fit the mold of what most people are looking at. So
mm-hmm.
how they look at people, and I'll say one other thing, actually.
It's like, if I can jump in here, the primacy is given to the potential for the expression of a unique talent rather than the fit in a particular role that's already existing. Is that right?
That's exactly right. And, you know, they're looking for people that have that flexibility. I call it extreme flexibility. It's one of the things they care about because they want to move people into different jobs and they want to create big opportunities for people.
So how did you identify, I want to back up here, this category of people, like who fit the description, and how did you go about doing this research, I guess is what I'm asking.
Sure. Yeah, so it's kind of funny. I started off just as an observation I had of something that I thought was kind of interesting, and that was I'm really into, I'm a foodie and into high-end restaurants, good quality restaurants, and everyone.
They have a few of those in Hanover.
Actually not, but that's okay. But there happens to be a place called Chef Panisse in Berkeley, California.
Of course, I've been there.
Yes, and I have as well. And
Alice Waters' great invention.
Alice Waters, and she, what has she done? She reinvented the farm-to-table organic food, local sourcing of quality ingredients, everything revolving around the ingredients. And turns out that so many of the people that worked for her went through that restaurant, became big names in the restaurant business themselves. And I saw that, I observed that, and I said, well, that's kind of interesting. I wonder if it's true in another industry that there's this one or a very small number of people that have had this outsized influence in the development of talent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I went to the NFL, because I happen to like that as well. And it didn't take long to realize it was Bill Walsh. And NFL's a good example, because that's an industry, because sports, the world of sports is loaded with data, where you can actually measure it very, very precisely. For example, out of the 32 head coaches in the past season in the NFL, fully 20 of them were either working directly or indirectly for Bill Walsh.
That's incredible.
It's crazy. And so then I started, you know, once I saw that in the NFL, totally different from, you know, Chef Panisse, I thought, well, let's go look at some other industries. And I went from advertising to hedge funds to consumer packaged goods to American comedy and fashion. And it wasn't hard to find, through talking to a lot of people and kind of doing a deep dive to what was going on in that industry, it wasn't hard to find those one or two people that had this outsized influence in the development of really a generation of talent.
Mm-hmm. So that was the criterion for selection, is people who have had a huge impact on their field through the growth of talent in that field.
That's exactly right.
Wow, okay. So now that everybody understands how you chose these people, you then looked at, well, what is it that they do to have this outside impact on the growth of talent in their field? And so apprenticeships, you know, creating roles for people to enable them to express their unique talents. I'm curious, especially on this show, we focus on work and the relationship to its relationship to the rest of life. Is there something that super bosses do that is, that particularly invests in the person as a whole human being? Is that a part of the magic?
So it's, I don't know whether it would be the same way that your own work might indicate, but I'll tell you a couple of ways that I think that happens. Number one, people that work for super bosses are really engaged in the job. You know, the employee engagement scores are disastrous everywhere.
Yes.
They have created a job where individual contributors can actually have an impact. They know that they're important, because everybody's important. And that's a powerful thing in your life, to have that feeling, to know that it's one of the biggest motivators out there. And that's part of what super bosses do. And the other thing they do, and this is really about the whole career, if you will, is that they are, in many cases, even willing to help you, if you're working on their team, help you move forward in your career, not just working for them, but going outside of that team to another part of the company, or even a different organization entirely. And that's a bit unusual, that you would actually groom talent. And the subtitle of the book is, you know, mastering the flow of talent.
Yes.
So not just people coming in, not just what you do with them when they're part of you, your team, and the organization, but what you do as they move out, and in some cases even help them move out. It's very counterintuitive, but if you think about what's really important for an individual, what do they want? Well, I don't think most individuals are thinking what they want is to work for Ms. X or Mr. Y, who's your boss, for the rest of their life. They're looking to fulfill their own potential.
Of course.
And that's what super bosses enable them to do.
You know, I was an executive at Ford Motor Company for a few years, as I've probably told you in one of our previous conversations, from 1999 to 2001. So I was head of leadership development for Ford. And I hired a lot of people in that role. And one of the critical elements of my interviews, and I did literally hundreds of interviews with people, was to explore with them what they would want to do next. Like, what would success look like in terms of the next job that they would have following their stint working in my shop? And it's a question that many of them had not been asked before. But I really tried to make it, I didn't always succeed, but I really tried to make it a point of focus with the people who came to work for me, that they would leave their time with me in a better role following that experience, and that The more I made that an explicit part of my hiring practice, the more that other people, of course, wanted to work for me.
You're exactly right. I use the term talent magnet in the book to describe just what you're talking about.
And it's not that hard to do, and it's actually a lot of fun. I want to remind listeners I'm speaking with Sidney Finkelstein, who is the Stephen Roth Professor of Management at Dartmouth College. He's the author of the great new book, Super Bosses, How Exceptional Leaders Master the Flow of Talent. If you have questions about how you can be a super boss, or perhaps even better, how you can get your boss to be a super boss, Sidney, I wonder if you have some magic on that score. Give us a call, 844-942-7866. That's 844-WHARTON, 844-942-7866. So I know that listeners are probably eager to find out, well, what do I do to enhance my capacity as a boss that is a super one so that I can have a bigger impact on the world through the legacy that I create, through the people that I cultivate? What can people do?
Right. So I want to say right off the top, every single thing that super bosses do is teachable, is learnable. That's good news. It's not rocket science. It takes a lot of work. You don't become, you know, Ralph Lauren or George Lucas overnight. There's a lot you got to do. But if you're willing to do it, it's all there. It's all possible. And in fact, I tried to talk a lot about some of the specific steps you can take from even what we talked about earlier in terms of hiring somebody. You have your whole method of hiring, but how about just experimenting and trying hiring one person, going out of your way to think about how to find somebody where you find the person before you find the job and back them into it. And the sky's not going to fall when you do it. And you're going to begin that process of just opening your brain, your mind to, you know, the possibility of finding talent all kinds of other places. I think there's some really specific things you can do as well that go far beyond that. I would look carefully at your calendar. We're so scripted these days, right? People have so many meetings, and those meetings are killers. I don't understand why we put ourselves through that in job after job with so many meetings. Push yourself out of that world. Of course, it's not going to disappear, but leave time for much more unstructured interaction where you pretty much arrive unannounced at the cubicle or office or desk of someone on your team, and you dedicate 30 minutes or an hour to digging in closely with her or with him exactly what they're doing, and you push them and you challenge them and you coach them and you help them think about it maybe a little bit differently, and certainly you enable them to learn from your own experience. It's a little thing, but it actually makes a big difference.
You could even do it in smaller chunks. It doesn't have to be a full hour or even a half hour or even 20 minutes. In 10 minutes or even 5, you can have an interaction that really touches people and demonstrates to them your interest in their development, right?
You really could. It's a question, and how hard is that to do in the scheme of things? It's only hard if we allow ourselves to adopt this idea that, oh, I'm so busy, I'm running here, I'm doing that, I'm doing this. We push that on ourselves. We constrain ourselves in so many ways, and I think it's a mistake. So super bosses are looking for those opportunities. I also think we should think about how accessible we make it. So this is about us as a boss going to find somebody else to talk to on our team and help them or coach them. But how easy are we? What were the barriers that we're putting in front of us that we might not even know that make it difficult for people on our team to interact with us, kind of the other part of that relationship? And a remarkable number of super bosses place their desks not in an office, not in a corner office, but a wide open area where anyone could reach them at any time.
So being accessible.
It's a symbolic thing, but it's meaningful, I think. So you definitely can do that.
I wanted to ask you about whether super bosses are always nice. In other words, is it possible to be a super boss who is like scary, or can infuse a work environment with a sense of fear while still holding people to really high standards and pushing them far?
Yeah, it's a good question, because being a super boss doesn't mean you're a soft touch. The definition of a super boss is someone who helps other people get better and creates talent. Well, there's a lot of ways to do that. And while the super boss playbook, if you will, is very similar in terms of apprenticeship and innovation and finding talent, the style does vary. And in the book, I actually talk about three different styles, including one that, dare I say, it's called the glorious bastard. It's the manager, the Larry Ellison type, if you will, mm-hmm. maybe the Steve Jobs type, although Steve Jobs never doesn't appear in my book at all. I didn't study Apple closely at all. Mm-hmm. But it's that personality that we're familiar with now. They are just really tough, and they're not necessarily the best, the happiest places to work. So it's not for everyone. But if you can handle it and you can absorb the learning that's going on, mm-hmm. this kind of hyper-intense environment, then the opportunities are gigantic. And you look at the legacy of a Larry Ellison, all the people that work for him that ended up, Mark Benioff running Salesforce.com now, lots of others. Mm-hmm. But it's not an easy thing to do for those types of people.
So high expectations are important. You know, I wonder if there are lessons that you drew, whether in the book or just in your own life, about cultivating talent as a super boss and being a parent. Do you see any parallels?
Yeah, I found the more I got into the super boss world, mm-hmm. the more you see that it applies to everything. And in this case, I actually dedicated the book to my own mother, and I called her the first super boss I ever had.
Nice.
Yeah.
What made her a super boss, Sydney?
Now you're gonna have to give me several hours on the phone.
Okay, you got a minute.
Well, certainly high expectations, but you just knew uh-huh. that this was someone that had your best interests at heart, uh-huh. that wanted you to be successful, but also was not going to just kind of let you linger. Was going to open the door to a world that says there's nothing you can't do. It turns out not to be true. I'm not an Olympic athlete. I never made the Montreal Canadiens hockey team. But
is that what she wanted?
I would have loved to be a hockey player.
But is that what she wanted? Your mom.
What she wanted is for me to have opportunities to fulfill my potential. Mm-hmm. And she opened the door to doing that. And she did it, you know, in a very subtle way, just by talking. You know, it's not like mm-hmm. there was no lecture going on here. It was maybe just being a good parent, but it had a gigantic impact on mm-hmm.
And how do you think that translated, if I may ask, to your own parenting style? You have kids, right?
I do. I have actually one daughter who's now 25 years old. And I have done so many of the same types of things I thought I learned. Mm-hmm. But you know what's funny is it's only in doing this research for super bosses that I came to the realization about some of the things we're talking about now. You know, things are in you. You don't even know. There's stories I remember from my own life that happened to me with different people doing different things mm-hmm. That were very impactful, but I didn't appreciate or fully appreciate just how meaningful some of those things were. Mm. And in thinking back and doing this own research and talking about all these other people, it became apparent.
Jessica is calling from Philadelphia to talk with you, Sydney. Jessica, welcome to Work and Life. How can we help you?
Hi, thank you for having me. Yeah, I had a question. I work in corporate America, and I have a boss who's very, who goes by the laws of micromanagement. So she, you know, every day we use Salesforce.com. So she's, you know, where are you? What are you doing at this time? I'm in sales, so I'm never usually in the office. But mm-hmm. I guess my question is, you know, what's the best way to deal with that type of micromanagement? Because I'm not very good at dealing with that.
So how do you change a micromanager into a super boss if you're working for her?
The problem with a micromanager that doesn't have the other part of the story that super bosses come with, which is delegator. They delegate and they are closely attuned to what you're doing. They do both. Kind of counterintuitive, but they do that. When you have a person is just on one side, you have a much deeper problem. Why do people do that is what I think about, and mm-hmm. my experience at least, and Stu, I know you've thought about it and talked about this yourself a lot, is that when a boss doesn't truly trust the people on their team, mm-hmm. they end up doing either too much, not delegating as much, or always kind of checking. And some of that could be internal to that person, and that person could highly benefit from some coaching on occasion, but other times it could be that the subordinate in this example, Jessica in this example, no matter how good she is, might really need to sell up in a sense. We talk about managing up. Well, what about selling up? About how you're adding value, how you're creating value, and to kind of engender a deeper level of trust between boss and team member.
Jessica, do you want to follow up? Does that make sense to you? Or do you see an opportunity for you to to change the relationship in such a way that your boss would trust you more and thereby be less micromanaging?
Yeah, you know, I think you're right on with that. I think, you know, it does come down to, you know, every time you have a conversation, it's me explaining to her, reinforcing everything I've done and what I continue to do for the company. I guess my concern is, you know, because it's a continuous relationship that her and I have, you know, how do I make it easier and, you know, how can I make it so that she trusts me? Because I think it does come down to trust, and you're right about that. And to your point, I think, you know, I don't think she does trust me. I don't think she trusts anybody on this team. But I guess, how can I better work with her, knowing that that's how she feels, you know?
Yeah.
Sid, do you have any ideas?
That's a really tough situation.
A lot of people find themselves in that situation.
Yeah, they absolutely do. And so I think trying to demonstrate with results your capability and what you can do. I don't know whether you know her well enough or can find a way to suggest that she start to work with a coach or some such thing. That could be a sensitive thing to ask directly, but maybe indirectly is a possibility. I know it's a lot easier to say what I'm about to say than do it, but sometimes you don't have the right boss, and that boss is not going anywhere, and you need to look for an internal transfer of some type or another opportunity. Some people just will not change because of who they are, and you know some of these insecurities could be so deeply embedded in who they are that it started a long time ago. So I don't know that any of those are like great solutions to this problem, but those are some of the things I'm thinking of.
Jessica, thank you so much for your call. I hope you found that helpful. If you are wanting to talk more about what it means to become a super boss, or perhaps to help others to become someone who really does cultivate talent, give us a call, 844-942-7866. But we are winding down this wonderful conversation with Sydney. I want to ask you one more question before we do wrap and go to a short break, and that is, what's the impact that you're hoping your book is going to have on the business world in terms of getting across a certain set of ideas and tools that can help people cultivate talent and enrich their lives and their working lives?
Yeah, you know, at an individual level, and I mentioned employee engagement before, I just find it an abysmal situation when so many people are at a job that just doesn't have any fulfilling sense to it, where they're just totally not engaged. Super bosses, even though they could be tough, as we discussed, they absolutely do convey the importance of each person. They make you feel like you have an impact. I mean, the whole world of millennials, that's all they want. They want right from the start, and the super boss approach is one that's very meaningful. And then the second thing is from an organizational point of view. If you look at where and how organizations have changed over the last 10, even 20 years, there's been incredible innovation in supply chain management and manufacturing and technology and marketing and sales. Where's the innovation when it comes to HR? And I know there are a lot of apps and software that helps you run better meetings, and you know, you can figure out where everybody is, and there's all their feedback mechanisms. I'm not saying they're bad things. They all can add some value. But fundamentally, when you talk to senior executives, as you know, Stu, They're talking the same thing. We need talent. We need to get better talent. We need to solve our talent problem. It's our number one concern. Well, if they keep saying that's the same problem, year after year after year, it's time for something new, even if it sounds a little scary. And the super boss approach is that something new, I hope.
Sydney, I think we've lost your signal here, unfortunately. And so I think we're going to have to bring it to a close here. I'm not sure what happened there, but I certainly got the main message, and that is that the super boss approach is really a systematic analysis of what it takes to grow talent in your organization. And Sydney Finkelstein has gathered a ton of really practical wisdom about that subject in this wonderful new book called Super Bosses: How Exceptional Leaders Master the Flow of Talent. So I want to send out my thanks to Sid for being a part of our show tonight. And thank you for listening this first half hour of our show, Work and Life. Coming up after a very short break, I'm going to be taking your calls. We're going to be talking a little bit more about super bosses. we're going to talk a little bit about the boss, Bruce Springsteen, and also this whole issue of trust, how you build it, and what it means for us to develop that kind of trust in the digital world. Stay tuned. More on Work and Life from Stu Friedman, that's me, on Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School, Sirius XM 111.